Well, Jim, today we're going to answer the age-old question.
What? Wait, which age-old question?
Why does sugar dissolve better in hot tea than cold tea?
Okay.
I feel like you might know the answer already, but we're also going to talk about why stirring helps dissolve things.
Okay.
And we're also just going to talk about why things dissolve better in hot liquids in general, not just sugar. All things.
Okay.
So are you ready?
I'm ready. Let's do it.
To even talk about what dissolving is?
Yes.
All right. Let's dissolve into it. I just thought of that. Let's actually get into it.
But is it a hot enough topic for us to dissolve into it easily? Or?
That was so good. Okay. And go. Hey, I'm Melissa.
I'm Jam.
And I'm a chemist.
And I'm not.
And welcome to Chemistry for Your Life,
a podcast that helps you understand the chemistry of your everyday life.
Okay, so this is a request from a listener and real life friend, Kim Ed person's spouse.
Okay.
Neil asked, so they didn't ask about sugar, but I'm broadening it out.
Okay.
Asked about why things dissolve better in hot liquids and cold ones. And their example is actually like a fiber powder, you know, if you mix fiber powder in, it goes a lot better into a hot liquid than a cold liquid.
Okay.
So that's what we're going to talk about.
Okay.
But also we stir while we do things. So I also want to talk why we stir when we're trying to get things to dissolve.
Right. Okay.
And I thought you might know actually I thought this might be like a tire episode incident where you might be able to think about everything that's happening at the molecular level and come up with a guess as to what's happening.
Okay.
But it also might be more complicated than you thought. So it's like a 50-50 shot. So I wanted to just pause for a minute and see, and the listeners at home, they can pause too, take a little pause break and think to yourself, do you know what's happening when something dissolves in water or other liquids? And why do you think the stirring and the heating might help?
Okay. Okay, I think I've got a guess.
Okay.
So but I remember us talking about a couple things. Dissolving, we've talked about several times.
Mm-hmm.
We also talked about a suspension before.
Mm.
And so just taking the example you said in the intro, like sugar into tea, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking it takes the sugar we're putting in there needs to find its way to distribute itself all throughout. Right?
Correct.
And so that should mean that there needs to be a lot of things happening at the molecular level for that to happen. So mm-hmm. like you have a granule of sugar or whatever
mm-hmm.
for it to spread out throughout.
Mm-hmm.
My question, I guess, is one thing, is it going to be linking up with other stuff or is it just going to like distribute itself?
Hmm.
Because we talk about reactions and things like that. We talked about heat increases the amount of energy, things moving around more freely.
100%.
Things can come apart. They can link back up other things. And so just heat is a way to make things happen faster
mm-hmm.
in many cases. I guess not every single case ever.
Yeah.
Maybe, but in many cases. And then that, in my mind, would make me think that the stirring does the same thing almost. It's like we're going to allow things to move around more and that will speed up things too. Just like whenever we... Like when you have super cooled water,
mm-hmm.
but nothing is disturbing it at all, it stays liquid. But if you have something that changes it, creates a nucleation side
yeah.
or gets things moving around, then things can happen more. So like the temperature or something increases its ability to react and happen faster, more energy, plus literally putting kinetic energy in by stirring
yeah.
would do the same thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So but what I don't have clarity on and I'm not really sure about is whether... You putting sugar in tea just distributes the molecules throughout the thing
mm-hmm.
in an even way,
mm-hmm.
or if something happens more than that. And that's where I bet that maybe dissolving might be more complicated than I think.
It's not that much more complicated.
Okay.
I think that is a really good starting place. And you're like, oh, it's It's like you didn't hit it out of the park, but you definitely like made a base or two. Oh, you don't like sports. Let me think.
I was going to say, is there anything, somehow it's still an insult because it's a
It's kind of like reference. The shoot for the moon. And even if you miss, you'll end up among the stars.
Nice. There we go.
You ended up among the stars. You didn't quite get to the moon, but you're really close. And I would say you have like a vague outline of concepts, but okay. You don't have it like crystal clear, you know?
I don't think I do either. So,
but that was a really, really good, like, I love that you're thinking about the molecular level and putting energy in. That's everything I want you to be thinking about.
Okay, cool.
I also liked this because, so it applies to like, you know, if you have a hot tea or here in the South, we make iced tea a lot. And if you've ever worked at a restaurant or if your family makes tea, it works best if you put the sugar in while it's still hot and mm-hmm. then cool it down. Mm-hmm. Iced coffee. A lot of times I will use like if you have it hot and then you let it cool down, if you put the cold, like the sugar in after it's iced, it gets all the like granules. They yep. don't like really dissolve. So I'll use like a syrup so that it goes in
right.
better.
Right.
So there's a reason that all of that happens. And the other thing I was going to say was, even when you're baking, because we're coming up on the holiday season,
mm-hmm.
we're recording a little bit ahead of time, but when this comes out, it'll be like Halloween has passed. We're moving into the like meatiness of the holiday season. Mm-hmm. If you're making meringues for pies or for like marrying cookies or whatever, a lot of times I'll have you heat up the egg whites to dissolve sugar into it, or like for some different types of buttercream, and you also whisk. So you heat and you whisk up egg whites to get sugar to dissolve in. So this concept has a lot of applications across everyday life.
Okay.
Hot coffee versus cold coffee, hot tea versus cold tea, heating up egg whites and stirring. It's all over the place. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I thought of an analogy that I felt like would explain what dissolving actually is most clearly.
Okay.
Okay. So imagine I'm going to use Halloween colors because it's still Halloween. So I'm going to use purple and orange.
Okay.
Where we are in time.
Right.
We're getting ahead for the holiday season. So yeah. Imagine that you have a group, a like very large group of people in purple shirts.
Okay.
And then you have a smaller group of people in orange shirts.
Mm-hmm.
So if you just plopped the orange group of people right down in the very middle of the purple group,
mm-hmm.
you'd be able to see that orange really clearly.
Right.
Now, if you spread all the orange out and dispersed it, you know, around the crowd, it doesn't necessarily have to be evenly dispersed, but it's dispersed around the crowd. And for every single person in an orange shirt, you surrounded them by people in purple shirts.
Mm-hmm.
And those people in purple shirts are like, you know, doing the tunnel that like moms do after soccer. Put your hands up so you'd like make the tunnel with me.
Yep.
For the people on YouTube.
Uh-huh.
They do that thing, you know?
Yes.
But imagine
yes.
it's like a circle of people all doing that.
Okay.
You would not really be able to see the people in the orange shirts, right?
Right.
Okay. So that is similar to what happens when molecules like of sugar dissolve. So there's not a reaction that's happening per se, but the molecules do interact with each other.
Right.
I'm just going to take a little detour because whenever I say per se, I always think of Full House and Uncle Jesse because that was the first time I'd ever heard it.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, that was just a little aside.
I think I have the same memory.
Really?
Like, I can kind of, I think I can hear him say, you know. That's so funny.
Throw it back. Okay.
Yeah.
Back in it. Okay. So now if you have sugar molecules, it's not a chemical reaction. The sugar molecules aren't breaking up, just like the people in the orange shirts. You're not, you know, breaking up their bodies. They're still a whole person.
Okay.
So it's still a whole molecule, but instead of having a large group of sugar molecules together in one clump,
uh-huh.
you break up those molecules.
Got it.
And each individual sugar molecule would be solvated. So that means the thing you're dissolving it into, that's the solvent.
Mm-hmm.
It would, the molecules of that would surround the molecule of the sugar. So okay. say you're dissolving sugar in water or fiber powder in water or whatever it is. You have one molecule of that
mm-hmm.
and it will interact with water molecules, intermolecular forces.
Right.
And the water molecules will react with it and each other. So they'll surround that thing. So instead of just having like several sugar molecules together, you have one sugar molecule surrounded on all sides by water molecules.
Okay.
And that means that thing is completely solvated. It's completely covered in the molecules of the solvent.
Mm-hmm.
And if you disperse that all throughout and you have all the sugar molecules are all completely covered by the water molecules, they're first of all going to be very small. We can't see things on a molecular level. So it looks like it's gone away.
Mm.
But second of all, it means that, you know, it's all dispersed out in the liquid.
Got it.
So you still have an intact molecule. You still have a tiny molecule size of sugar, but it's just surrounded completely by the water. So just like if you think about the example with the purple shirts are the water or the solvent, whatever uh-huh. you're dissolving into. And the orange shirt people are the things that are getting dissolved in. And the orange shirts are being completely covered by the purple shirts, so you can't even see that they're there anymore.
Right.
Does that make sense?
It makes total sense. Yes, I'm with you.
And the way that the molecules are interacting with each other, the reason they're surrounding each other is intermolecular forces.
There we go. Okay.
So that's how the water is interacting with the thing in the middle. You know, the sugar and water are interacting. They have, they both have the ability to do the strongest intermolecular force, hydrogen bonding, which if you want a lesson on intermolecular forces, go all the way back to Gecko episode.
Oh, yeah.
We've talked about that one a few times lately.
Yes. And also, did we rebroadcast it?
We have rebroadcasted there we go. It, but it wasn't like this week, this month. It was like probably earlier in the year.
Right.
And also we've done a lot of episodes on intermolecular forces, and that's why we have the shirt that says Return of the Intermolecular Forces.
You mean
may the intermolecular forces be with you. I was thinking Return of the Jedi. different Star Wars reference. Return of the intermolecular forces. Well, now it's a return of them.
Yeah. What if we made one for each movie? It's like a new intermolecular force.
A new application of intermolecular force.
Yeah. Revenge of the intermolecular forces.
Anyway, so you can't dissolve something that can't interact, you know, with the solvent at all.
Right. So I was going to ask. So yeah, there's a limitation, like some things can dissolve in water, some things cannot. Maybe some things that can't dissolve in water could dissolve in something else.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. Okay. Like, oil can't dissolve in water, but oil could dissolve in a different type of oil.
Right.
Okay. Or like ethanol, alcohol, that dissolves in water, but I bet it doesn't dissolve in oil. I'm guessing. I've never tried it.
Or like carbonating stuff. You probably couldn't just carbonate anything, correct?
Probably not.
I mean, we have a carbonation machine. We could try it.
Well, I'm thinking,
let's see if we can carbonate some vegetable oil.
I think carbon dioxide is linear and nonpolar. I think. Pause. Little intermission. Let me make sure that's right.
Sorry to throw a weird question in. It might not even be helpful.
Yeah, that's okay. I mean, I think dissolving gases are a little different also, because if you put it under a lot of pressure, I think it'll be forced in.
Right.
I'm thinking of solid particles in liquid.
Okay.
And the same thing is true, like in dissolving gases. Yeah, maybe just put dissolving gases out of your mind, because gases dissolve better in things that are cold anyway. So gases act kind of different than solids and other liquids.
Yeah, they don't play by our rules, you know?
Yeah, gases are wild. So just disregard that question that Jam asked, even though it was a good one. I think gases play by different rules. So
yeah,
let's focus on...
It was just like a too good of a question.
It was just too good.
Sorry.
If you want to learn about gases, you can... We also did an episode on Diet Coke and Mentos, and we talk about how the water, like how the carbon dioxide molecules are all distributed out in there.
And we did one about carbonated water have a taste too.
Yeah, that one was good. Mm-hmm. That's making me want carbonated water.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, anyway, so yeah, the intermolecular forces, it's what interacts with the water molecules with the thing it's dissolving around, or whatever the solvent is with the thing it's dissolving around, but also they'll interact with each other, you know. Yeah. Water will interact with each other, so the water will be surrounding it and have something in the middle.
Yep.
And they're all able to sort of interact with each other, and so it basically, you know, breaks people up, sort of like your molecules up. It's kind of like when you're on cop shows and they're going to investigate somebody, you know, on like CSI, and you're like, we got to separate the witnesses out, or, you know, we got to separate the suspects out. So the water just separates out all the individual molecules. So it's not a large enough thing for us to see anymore. And that's why it appears to disappear.
Got it. Okay. Yes. Got it.
And that is how things get dissolved.
Wow.
Now let's talk about the heat and the stirring. Unless, do you have any questions on that?
So they want to get the one molecule by itself.
Mm-hmm.
And the intermolecular forces are what make that happen.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess we could keep going. I'm like, I guess that works pretty well too, because normally there is a limit to how much you can dissolve into something.
Yes.
So that is another factor there, right? But I was thinking, yeah, for a second, I was like, but would only work if there's more of the other thing.
Yes. Yeah.
So, okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. There is, what you're hitting on is like the solubility. So if something is able to dissolve, and then there is like a saturation level. So the solubility is this thing able to dissolve in this other thing anyway? And then at what point is it saturated? Has all of the salt that you can possibly put in this water, all the sugar you can possibly put in this water, there's a maximum point. Yeah. And when you've reached that, there's saturation.
Okay.
But what we're going to talk about next is how heat impacts that.
Okay.
Okay, so that's how things dissolve. And the mechanism by which they are sort of held in place, or they keep the molecules of the thing dissolved in there, it's called the solute. Solute is dissolved in solvent.
Okay.
My high school chemistry teacher wrote solvent on the board with a big V. Shout out, Miss Mullis. A big V for the solvent.
Mm-hmm.
And then she wrote solute inside the V. So it's like, got the solute it. Is going into the solvent.
Got it.
Like it was a big cliff or whatever, canyon. So the solute goes in the solvent. So when all of the solute molecules are separated out by the solvent, it's sort of held in place, or the interactions happen by intermolecular forces, right? But the interactions with the molecules have to happen somehow. And we've talked about this in baking powder and baking soda.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have a medium for things to move around in, reactions or interactions between molecules happen a lot more slowly.
Right.
But in this case, all the molecules in water are always moving around whether or not you see it. They have a level of energy to be able to move around.
Mm-hmm.
And so they are moving around. And then if you put the sugar molecules in there, they're also moving, but much less, right? Mm-hmm. Because they're solid. So if you have something that's hot, it will put energy in that allows them to move around more. You know, if you heat up water, you're adding more energy and letting those molecules move and move and move and move around even more. And then they have more opportunities to interact with the sugar and for the water to start surrounding the sugar molecules. And that's why the more heat you put in, the hotter something is, the more energy it is, the more molecules can move around, the more opportunities they have for the sugar molecules to be separated out by the water molecules.
Got it. Okay.
Or whatever your solute and solvent are.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
And then stirring does the same thing. As you're stirring, you're putting energy in, and you're also breaking things up and creating more opportunities for interactions to happen between these molecules.
Got it. Okay.
And that's it.
So water is both the molecule that's trying to surround it and the medium by which it can interact.
Because it's liquid.
Because it's liquid. Got it.
And the heat is the energy that allows them to move around more and more. I mean, even at room temperature, they already have a level of heat in there, right? Mm-hmm. You know, but if you make it cold, you're taking away energy from those molecules. So if you're making it cold, you take away energy from the molecules, then they're going to be able to interact with other sugar less and less and less. And so there's going to be a point at which it's not going to be able to take that sugar in.
Right.
But as you heat it up, you're putting more and more and more energy in, and it'll get to a point where it can take in more sugar.
Right. Right. Okay.
So that saturation point is different at different periods of heat.
Okay. Got it.
Make sense?
Yes, I think it does.
Do you want to take a stab at explaining back to me why we stir things, why we heat things up, why things dissolve easier in that?
Yeah, so I'm gonna branch off of your people orange shirts, purple shirts analogy.
Okay.
So who was in who? By the way, was it the orange shirts being dissolved into the
purple? Yeah.
Purple shirts. Okay. So the purple shirt folks are saying to the orange shirt folks, are like, to you who wear orange shirts, we salute you.
Mm-hmm. Basically. We saw you.
Something like that. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, do you who wear orange roots? That helps you remember. We still sell you to you.
This was what I wanted to find a way to say that.
How long have you been thinking about that?
Yeah, ever since you said the and the salute.
You looked like a little, you had a small look of consternation, but it was like, no, I thought you were not sure, but now I know you were thinking about when can I put this joke in here?
Yeah, it doesn't quite work because salute is not a verb, right? So it's the noun.
Yeah.
So yeah, anyway. Okay. So we got the purple shirts and orange shirts. Mm-hmm. Purple shirts, water. Or water. Whatever.
Tea. Salute.
Yeah.
Solvent.
Solvent.
Yeah.
Sugar, orange shirts mm-hmm. was going to be dissolved, or the salute, right? Mm-hmm. So if you have those groups of people and you add a lot of orange shirts, orange shirted people to the group of purple shirt people, mm-hmm. but it's colder, mm-hmm. the purple shirt people, those molecules would be like closer together. They can interact with the orange shirt people, mm-hmm. but it's going to be a little slower. It's going to be kind of limited. It's almost like if you had a densely packed room and people were not being very social. In fact, they're almost maybe say even huddled together a little bit because it's kind of cold or something. Mm-hmm. You add a bunch more people, it just might not quickly flow and interact and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like, you know, just everyone's just kind of talking and staying right where they're at.
Like maybe all the purple people already know each other. All the orange shirt people already know each other.
Right.
And you're trying to put them together and it's like a no-go.
Yeah. It's like there may be a little bit of natural stuff just on the edge where the seam is, so to speak. Mm-hmm. But the people, the orange shirt people who are further away, there's no way for them to interact with the purple shirt people. Mm-hmm. Really. They're kind of just insulated in. And so it'd be like that kind of a social dynamic where that's just not happening. And then say adding heat is like doing something like, okay, everyone change seats, something like that. Mm. It just like forces something like that.
Yeah.
And so then a lot more of the, or say even you give some sort of motivation like, okay, you know, and in this case, of course, there's more purples than oranges, right?
So like those bingo cards where you had to get to know people.
Yes. Yes. Or like, I think I've used this as an example before, but I was in student council back in high school and we'd have these larger, like sort of district student council get togethers for mm-hmm. the various leaders of the student council. They always had various icebreakery things to force people to get to interact with people from the other schools.
Yep.
It'd be almost like that, like introducing that, but it'd be more like, all right, purples, you've got to get to know some oranges or something yep. like that. It's something motivates them and maybe you give some sort of reward or something like that. But as soon as you introduce that as an idea, as a motivation, purples start looking for oranges mm-hmm. and moving around and it just gets easier. The flow of the room happens. It starts happening more and more. And then say you also say something like, that you say that's just heat.
Okay.
And then maybe you add some other motivation on top of that. Mm-hmm. That's the stirring. That would mm-hmm. be like, okay, you need to talk to as many oranges as you possibly can. Mm-hmm. I think it's really people moving around like crazy.
Yeah.
But if there's fewer oranges than there are purples in the first place, mm-hmm. that's going to mean, you know, 5 or 6 purples to every 1 orange, mm-hmm. something like that. And so this surrounding of the oranges by purples is going to start happening.
Yeah.
Because there are only so many oranges. Mm-hmm. And all the purples, you've created a motivation for them. But in the case of the actual molecules, not the shirted folks, we've got the fact that there's intermolecular forces at play. Mm-hmm. They want to surround these oranges.
I mean, they're happy to interact with them. I don't know happy if it's to. Like, they're like, interact with water, interact with sugar. They might have a similar strength, but it's like, if they come near them, they're going to interact. They're and, like, oh, you're here. We're interacting.
Yes. And it is a liquid, so they can, right? Mm-hmm. But as long as we have put some energy in, both in heat or by stirring, that is very possible and they're very happy to.
Yeah.
But we have encouraged it by yeah. doing those things. And then they surround them and then the sugar molecules are individualized. They're broken out of their granule, so to speak.
Yeah.
And then they're surrounded by multiple molecules of yeah. the liquid and dispersed throughout the liquid, ideally.
Yeah.
Pretty evenly. So when we take a sip, it tastes like every sip has an equal amount. Mm-hmm. Instead of getting to the bottom of your drink and being like, whoa, that's sweet at the bottom and it's all concentrated in one place or yeah. worse, ooh, that's grainy and yeah. disgusting and yeah. And then the rest of your drink's not sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Something like that. Did I miss something?
No, that was great. It kind of reminded me of when I used to be a camp counselor and I was at a church camp. Uh-huh. And some weeks you would have a whole church come together and like mm-hmm. that whole church was in one cabin and then there would be like two or three new people that weren't part of that church that just came separately on the same week.
Yeah.
And usually the people who all knew each other would integrate those people in, and they'd be like, oh, you're here, so we might as well interact with you. And then by the end, you couldn't really tell who was with the church and who wasn't, right. Who was new.
Yeah.
And so it kind of reminds me of that, where it's like, oh, you're here, so we might as well interact with you. It's not like they were going to look for them or specifically, yeah, or whatever, but if they're there, that you can't, and then they're sort of indistinguishable, you know?
Right. It's like, well, we're all in this glass of liquid together. Yeah. We're all in this, why not interact?
Why not interact?
Yeah.
Unless they're really different, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the intermolecular forces won't allow them to.
Yeah.
But kind of also, when I was thinking about it, I was like, if you have one molecule of something, that one molecule is not really, because you said, oh, because, you know, the water's liquid. Mm-hmm. I was like, is the other thing liquid still or not, or solid still or not? And I was like, well, if you just have one molecule of something, it wouldn't be considered a solid or liquid or a gas, because the solid and liquid and gas, I think,
describes the
how
collection.
They interact with each other. Yeah.
Wow. That's crazy.
I think.
I like that idea as a sort of interesting, surprising, mm-hmm, answer. It's like, is one molecule of anything solid, liquid,
a
gas?
A state of matter. I don't think it is. Maybe if anything, you'd say it's gas, but I wouldn't say it's a gas in the when it's dissolved.
Right. Yeah, totally.
Weird.
So if you could add one molecule of sugar to a glass of something, would you say it's solid or gas? You couldn't say, really, right?
I don't feel confident saying.
Wow. It's
maybe like a gray area. Maybe other chemists would have thoughts, but my thought is I don't think you could say.
I guess that does kind of remind us, though, that all things are, I mean, like, we have the neat categories of solid, liquid, gas.
Yeah.
But to the molecules, it's probably.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
It's all molecules. I mean,
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah.
It's like,
they're not thinking of themselves in any way. They don't think, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're just like, sometimes I've got like lots of molecules like right next to me, really close. Sometimes I've got like a lot of room, but you know, it's just kind of how it is.
Kind of like how kids kind of get shuttled around, you know, mm-hmm, like toddlers. It's like sometimes at school, sometimes at home. I don't know why sometimes things happen and sometimes they don't.
It's just what life is like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was an interesting thing that occurred to me while you were kind of talking and describing.
That is interesting. I like that. I like that a lot.
Great. Well, that's it. That's our chemistry lesson for today. It's short and sweet, and it's food themed for the holiday season.
Nice.
And we're again touched on phases of matter, which we've been talking about a little bit lately. So
yes, that's
kind
awesome.
Of fun.
I like it.
Well, that was fun. But also, do you have any fun thing from your everyday life that you want to talk about?
Fun thing from my everyday life that I want to talk about. What a good question. Do you have something?
I do have something.
Okay, you go first.
Okay, well, y'all know we moved into a new house.
Oh, yeah.
And my friends, Abby and Steven, and they're also listeners of the show, they have been in a house for a while, and mm-hmm, they've been composting for a while, and they recently upgraded their compost situation.
Interesting.
And I inherited their compost.
Ah.
And it's so great because we cook with vegetables a lot. And like anytime we make ceviche and we have like, you know, leftovers of like the husk of an avocado or this or that.
Yeah.
I'm always like, man, I wish I had something to compost. Or like, you know, if there's like a piece of the tomato that's gone bad or whatever, I'm like, man, I wish I could compost.
Yeah.
Anytime I cut up the apple and leave the core, man, I wish I could compost. Mm-hmm. And I say that all the time. And now I can.
Nice.
And we finally got it set up in the backyard at the new house. And I've been using it for about a week now. And I'll have to Google, like, can I compost this? Can I compost that? And I'd been making these pumpkin muffins lately. And I had extra pumpkin puree and I put it in a little Tupperware thing, mm-hmm, and then promptly forgot about it with the craziness of moving. I wasn't able to make more.
Yeah.
And I found it in the fridge and it had molded. I was like, oh, this is going to go to waste. And then I was like, wait, can I compost this?
Uh-huh.
And I could.
Nice.
And it was just really exciting.
That's awesome.
And so yeah, anyone have any composting tips, let me know. I'm kind of flying blind. I'm just kind of throwing things in there. Paper towels that you only use for food stuff, which that's also nice.
Yeah.
Because we'd stopped using paper towels completely. But the only time that was challenging was for our cast iron pans,
mm-hmm.
you know, cause they are, you get oil mm-hmm. and if you have oil on a rag, it can be kind of hard to get the oil out of it.
Yeah. And do you want to mix it with other things you're washing and maybe you're
just getting oil. Sometimes you get the oil smell on everything. And yeah. that was getting really frustrating for us. And so now we have re-implemented paper towels in our house only to be used on that, on our cast iron. And so we have a compost now and I'm really excited about it.
You can compost paper towels?
Yes.
Nice.
Unless they've been used with like chemicals or something.
Right.
But
right.
if it's just something, food.
Yeah.
It seems like you can compost anything that's not chemicals. That's not chemicals. I'm doing the thing that I hate. When I say chemicals, I mean like cleaning chemicals or like non-food products,
right,
you know?
Right. Yep.
And I think, I'm sure it probably wouldn't be terrible, but part of it is you don't want to have like an excess of one type of molecule over another. So I'm thinking of like window cleaner, if that's primarily like ammonia, I think you're probably going to get some of that anyway in the breakdown.
Right.
But having too much might mess the balance off. I don't know. Anyway, so you can do paper towels that have mostly only come into contact with food products, but you can't do meat or dairy.
Mm-hmm.
But like vegetable scraps we've done. Brown paper bags, I think you can do as long as they're not coated. Paper towels.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we do, while you're re-implementing them, obviously you're composting them, which is great. We use bamboo paper towels here.
Oh, nice.
Because it's like you can grow it and it's not cutting down trees and stuff like that. But what I really wish, like every time we buy some of those again, which that's all we use, but I buy like a larger box every couple months or something.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, man, I wish this was cheaper. Like if more people were just growing bamboo and more of these companies existed
yeah.
and less were doing the tree trees thing, it'd be so much cheaper. But like it is like per roll
yeah,
kind of dumb how expensive it is. But it's yeah. also like there are probably like two or three companies I know of that are doing that right now. So it probably makes sense that it's more expensive.
Yeah.
Economy of scale kind of thing. But
and it's probably also like at one point, is there too much bamboo and it like becomes a problem for the environment the right. other way?
Yeah. But the nice thing is that they can completely cut it like real low and it grows back so much faster. So it's just like,
yeah, that is
they don't
nice.
Really need like to take up tons of fields of space of bamboo when it regenerates much more quickly.
That's true in Minecraft too.
Whoa. Minecraft is just like everyday life. Speaking of trees, can I tell you about the cool thing that...
Wait, I just want to do one thing.
Oh, yeah?
I just want to shout out the Swedish dishcloths that we use that are an alternative to paper towels. Doesn't your family use them too?
No, ditched them.
Oh, really? How come?
Because we have bamboo paper towels.
Oh, okay.
And there are things that we clean up with them that I was like, I don't like, I mean, things like they would soak it up like oil or like
yeah.
we have kids making messes and stuff. And we found that like the washing of them and like doing a, like that whole process of that kind of stuff and how they would change over time and stuff. It like didn't integrate itself into our life very well at all. So
interesting.
Got rid of them.
Well, we love them. They're still well integrated into our lives. And so probably we still keep using that for everything else.
Yeah.
And it's a cheaper option and it's more environmentally friendly and we'll just use the paper towels for food and composting.
Yeah. I would love to have used them. I feel like I could see the potential, but it didn't work well yeah. for us. So.
Yeah, it probably is harder too. Like if you have pets and stuff, like how many of those messes are so gross that yeah. you're like, I don't want to.
Right. But like also we have used like cloth, like, you know, rags and hand towels, stuff like that for some things. So it's like, it was kind of like, it's a mixture of those two things. It's like, mm-hmm. it's kind of like paper, but kind of like cloth. It's more in the middle. We kind of use either or.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things we can use cloth for and then just wash them with the towels.
Yeah.
And stuff. But. Yeah, I don't know. It's kind of interesting how I feel like there's probably a sweet spot for these and maybe we could have really made it work before we had certain things. But yeah, we had pets we were trying to use them with back then. And that was not ideal and stuff like that. But
I feel like we mostly use them for like chemical sprays, which again, I'm doing that thing, but mm-hmm. like y'all know what I mean by household chemicals, like kitchen counter spray,
yeah.
Like Clorox spray on like Windex spray on mirrors. Uh-huh. If we're like dusting down, we use it for that.
Yeah.
But then we use washcloths for a lot of other stuff. And then we use, I don't know what I was going to say.
Paper towels.
We're starting now to use paper towels again just for the cast iron. Right. But we use mostly washcloths for like pretty much anything else besides that.
The other thing I remember that was frustrating was we did not ever figure out a good place or way of drying them that worked well.
Oh, we just dry ours in the dryer.
See, the first time I did that, maybe it's the ones I bought, they didn't handle the grate.
They do kind of get weird shapes, but we just pile them up in a place where it doesn't matter that they're weird shaped.
Yeah, that probably would help. I like really wanted them to be flat again because it's so much easier to store them. So I would put them out and they would dry. But it was just like, I need like a surface to do that. We have a small laundry room and all that stuff. And it was like, ended up being like all these Swedish cloths are here drying slowly.
Yeah.
And I can't fold something there now. You know, it just ended up being like, and then we would often reach for something cloth or something paper.
You know how you have, instead. I don't know if you're this way, but I have different textures of cloths that I like for different things.
Mm-mm.
It's like, some things are really good at absorbing, so that's the kind of towel I want to dry my hand.
Uh-huh.
And some things are really good for scrubbing, so if there's like a stain, I'm like going to get that one. Like if there's something stuck on the counter.
Yeah.
I feel like it just adds to the variety of textures of cloth. So we treat them exactly like our other washcloths.
Got it. Yeah.
So they're just like a different vibe. They do some things better than others.
Yeah. I think the fact that they get harder again when they dry made me be like, I really want these to be flat. Yeah.
Interesting. But okay, well, that was a big old tangent away from our happy thing for this week.
Yes, my happy thing still is on this topic, though.
Okay, so perfect.
We got a tree.
Okay, I saw something that looked like a tree in your backyard and was like, is that a tree?
Yeah, it looks exactly like a tree.
But it's weird because it's in the middle of a concrete patch and I could only see the top of it.
Yep. So
did you bury it in the concrete?
No, I did not. But it's not planted yet. But we got so our city does this thing. It's just an organization called Keep Denton Beautiful. Mm. And every year they do a tree giveaway, which is pretty awesome.
That is awesome. I didn't know that.
All you got to do is be someone who lives in Denton. That's
it. Wow.
And you have to be able to prove it. So like have a driver's license or whatever.
Yeah.
But you register online. They have a set number of trees and a set number of species of tree each year. And I don't know if it changes or not, but I had put it on my calendar this year because I had missed this several years in the past, and the like registration for it went live on a Tuesday morning a few weeks ago, and I had a meeting booked that time, so I could not actually go log in exactly at the time.
That's so sad.
But I got done with the meeting, went and logged in, and there are two trees I was kind of stuck between what I wanted to reserve.
Mm-hmm.
Both of those were booked all the way out. Like it was like reserved all of them.
Mm-hmm.
So but there was an option for reserving or registering for the wait list.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I'll just do that and see what happens. And so my son and I went, and they said like, so I got an email. I was like, okay, if you're on the wait list, you need to show up at this time.
Mm-hmm.
No sooner. Cause we need like a clear like gap between people who registered for trees and actually have one reserved for them.
Mm-hmm.
And then a gap of time. And then waitlist folks. So on Saturday we went and went over to the area where they do this and waited in line and got up there, and they were like, yeah, we actually still have some of all of our trees. People register for them, but I guess lots of people forget, or they do it just in case and then maybe don't want to actually do it or follow through.
Yeah.
Or I don't know, I guess. I'm surprised that that's the case. Or maybe they always have a few extra. Who knows? But we really wanted to get a Schumard, I think it's how it's pronounced, or maybe Schumar oak, which is the tallest tree option they had. Because I'm all about like, I want to plant a tree, and also I want it to just like some person who owns our house someday in the future to be like, look, and this tree be like massive.
Mm-hmm.
And it just be like, man, how old is this tree? Or whatever.
Yeah.
But like they had a lot of options, and some people may want a smaller, slightly more decorative tree or whatever. But I was like, no, I want a big tree
nice
that's
going
to last a long time. Uh-huh.
I'm going to look up what it looks like.
And so they get to be like, they can be like 100 feet tall, I think, something like that, which is crazy.
That is crazy.
They had 10 of them left when I got there. And so we got to get one.
Oh my gosh.
So it's been raining today and yesterday, but my son and I are going to plant it, dig a hole and figure out where we want it and plant it and do all the stuff. So I've just been taking care of it in the meantime in the pot it's in, but I'm trying to get it into some good old soil.
Are you thinking front yard or backyard?
Backyard.
Nice.
We lost, since we lived here, we've lost three trees back there.
That's so sad.
Died for different reasons. One of them I think was already dead when we moved in. But so I really wanted to put one back there because I'm like, okay, at this rate that we're losing some trees, I want to replace some and maybe I'll try to get one every year. Who knows?
Yeah.
So anyway, pretty dang cool.
Yeah, pretty. I was trying to do a pretty tree joke, but I couldn't quite get there.
Yeah.
Pretty dang cool.
Yeah, I love it. It was good.
That's very exciting.
So, and I've had this feeling for a while of like the trees, especially trees that live a long time. And when they die, it feels like, oh man, this tree had been here for so long.
Yeah.
And like, I think one of the trees that had died when we first moved in, like I'm sure it was either here or very small when this house was built in the 60s.
Yeah.
And there's just this feeling of like, oh, what a loss.
Yeah.
You know? So I'm like, I want to plant one that's going to be here a long time.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It's like that cycle of like these old trees that die. It's like, we got to be planting trees on a regular basis like that. If we were trying to, you know, not just have no trees someday. So anyway,
well, that's exciting. Yeah. Way to go, Denton, for caring about keeping Denton beautiful.
Keeping Denton beautiful.
And keeping nice things in nature.
Yeah. And I thought it'd be cool for my son to be like, oh, I remember we planted that tree when I was little, you know?
Yeah.
Or even if he doesn't remember, I could tell him like, you and I did that.
Yeah.
And if we're here a long time and it gets at least somewhat sizable.
Or like a picture of them with the tree when they're little and it's little and then they're big and it's big.
Yes. Yeah. That'd be cool.
That would be cool. Well, if you have any composting tips, if you have any tree growing tips, or if you have any Swedish dishcloth tips, we'd love to hear them.
So yes, please.
Please reach out on Instagram and share your happy things with us because we love it.
Yes. Yes, we do. Absolutely.
And thanks for telling me about that tree program. Probably one day when I have a house, I'll sign up and get one. So that's exciting.
Do it.
And thanks for learning about how sugar and other things dissolve and why we stir stuff when we're trying to dissolve it.
And thank you for teaching us. And if you have a question or idea for a topic of chemistry in everyday life that you'd like to share with us, please do that.
Just like Neil.
Just like Neil. We love y'all's ideas. And some of the best episodes we have come from you guys. So reach out to us on our website at chemforyourlife.com. That's chemforyourlife.com to share your thoughts and ideas. If you'd like to help us keep our show going and contribute to cover the cost of making it, you can go to patreon.com/chemforyourlife to join our super cool chem community of patrons. If you're not able to do that, you can still help us by subscribing on your favorite podcast app, rating and writing a review on Apple Podcasts, or subscribing on our YouTube channel, because that also helps us share chemistry with even more people.
That's right. This episode was made possible by our financial supporters over on This episode of Chemistry for Your Life was made by Melissa Collini and Jam Robinson. Jam Robinson is our producer, and this episode was made possible by our financial supporters over on Patreon. It means so much to us that you want to help make chemistry accessible to even more people. And those supporters on Patreon are Avishai B, Bree M, Brian K, Chris and Claire S, Chelsea B, Derek L, Emerson W, Hunter R, Jacob T, Christina G, Katrina H, Latila S, Lynn S, Melissa P, Nicole C, Rachel R, Stephen B, Shadow, Suzanne P, Timothy P, and Venus R. Thank you all again for everything you do to make Chemistry for Your Life happen. And an extra special thanks to Bree, who often creates illustrations to go along with episodes of Chemistry for Your Life. You can see those over on the YouTube channel, and you can thank Bree by following and supporting her, and her websites and Twitter are listed in our show notes.
And if you'd like to learn more about today's chemistry lesson, you can check out the resources in our show notes or in the description of the video on YouTube.
Yay, chemistry!
Yay, chemistry!